Hello, it's Robert Bathurst here. I was one of the first guests on My Time Capsule, and Mike has asked me to tell you that you can now listen to the podcast ad-free by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details of how to join are in the description of each episode. Mike says it's very reasonably priced. In fact, Mike says it's a bargain. And who am I to disagree, locked here in his cellar? Anyway, for a small subscription, Acast Plus, My Time Capsule, ad-free. Free. Unlike me.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of My Time Capsule. My name's Mike Fenton Stevens, and My Time Capsule is the podcast where people tell me the five things from their life that they wish they had in a time capsule. Four things that they cherish and one thing that they'd like to bury and forget. Now, my guest this week is, as Brian Logan from The Guardian and Bruce Dessel from The Evening Standard have said, Chloe Petz. They also said that she's one of the most compelling young comics and clearly a rising star whose name will soon be in lights. Yeah, I'm thinking of changing my name to Exit. I always wanted to see my name in lights. She's certainly one of the most exciting up-and-coming acts on the circuit. Chloe's Edinburgh show this summer, If You Can't Say Anything Nice, sold out in the first week of the festival, and she's currently touring the show around the UK, so book your tickets if you can. On television and radio, Chloe's appeared in her own segment every Saturday morning as a regular guest on Sky Sports News. She has also been a regular on The Frank Skinner Show, World Cup Breakfast on Sky Sports for the Men's Football World Cup in 2022, and previously for Good Morning Euros on Sky Sports, for the UEFA Women's Euros, and of course she's also been on Match of the Day Extra. So as you can tell, Chloe loves football, particularly Crystal Palace, as you'll hear. Chloe's also been on Jonathan Ross's Comedy Club on ITV, the stand-up sketch show, Richard Osman's House of Games, Random Acts on Channel 4, Hypothetical on Dave, Fighting Talk on BBC Radio 5 Live, BBC Three Quickies on, guess what, BBC Three, and she won Pointless Celebrities. Hurrah! Chloe's been shortlisted for the BBC Comedy Award, was a finalist of the Leicester Square New Comedian of the Year Award, and a runner-up in the Funny Woman Awards. She supported Ed Gamble on his Electric Tour and Frank Skinner during his West End run, and has performed at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, which she'll be returning to with her new show for this year's festival. She's a co-founder of The LOL Word, a queer comedy collective that hosts sell-out monthly London nights, boasting the finest female and non-binary queer acts on the circuit. Diva magazine described it as a space that is demographically queer, inclusive and safe. And on top of all that, the comedic talent is smart, insightful, hilarious and completely relatable, which I think also describes Chloe. So let's meet her and discover what she loves and the one thing she loathes that she'd want in a time capsule. How are you? All right?
Yeah, pretty good, yeah. I've got one of those days where it's sort of there's lots of little bits that I need to like choreograph. So I feel a bit manic, but as soon as I start chatting, I'm sure I'll settle down.
Yeah, I'll do my best to help. what I'll do then is to say to you, I think, this will cheer you up, I think that when Palace beat Sheffield United tonight, and then beat Brighton at the weekend away. At the same time, when they announced 10 points deduction for Nottingham Forest, 10 points deduction for Everton, you will be about 18 points clear of relegation.
Laughing is what we'll be.
Laughing.
Absolutely. If we lose tonight, I'll be doing a sort of... I can't really sort of snap my season ticket in half because it's digital. So maybe just throw my phone at one of the players.
Against the 10 pointers, I know.
Yeah. Who do you support?
I support Man United, and I have done since I was a tiny boy. My brother, though, my younger brother, is a lifelong Palace supporter, as are nearly all of my family. Yeah, he goes to almost every game. So you'd almost certainly, if you see someone who looks a bit like me, but is a bit manic and shouts at the ref a lot, that'll be him.
I'll be looking out for him, certainly. He sounds like my kind of guy.
He's a senior lawyer.
No way.
When he gets to Palace, he turns into a 15-year-old boy. You fucking motherfucker! Fuck!
I love it. Honestly, I love it. I think it's absolutely brilliant. The gestures that I've done at children is not worth thinking about. It's absolutely dreadful. But no, I respect this guy. I'd like to meet him, actually. I'll be looking out for him tonight.
You almost certainly will see him.
I'm sitting right on the corner, so I'm going to have a good view. So I presume the game will be quite boring. So that will give me a good opportunity to just have a little look for your brother.
Well, in the sense that you'll be 3-0 up at half time. Is that what you're
thinking? You're so much more positive than we are as Palace fans.
If I had to choose a London club, that would be the team. It's a fantastic atmosphere at Palace. It's unbelievable.
It's incredible.
Isn't it?
When we're doing well, and at the moment we're not. But, things will look up, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure they will.
There's loads of comedians that are Crystal Palace fans, and I think it's it's kind of a mix of self-flagellation and sort of self-deprecation that maketh the Palace fan.
Yeah, it's a good club to go to. So there we are.
Yeah, it's good.
All right, that's what I think is going to... That's my prediction, to cheer you up and make today easier.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So how's the tour going?
Tour's starting again on... I'm doing a Scottish leg of the tour. So I'm doing Edinburgh, Aberdeen, Glasgow, Newcastle. Mm-hmm. Newcastle just tagged on the end. And so it's kind of been a bit funny, this tour, because I did about 7 dates of it before Christmas because of scheduling things. Mm. And now I'm sort of, am I going to remember the show? What's the show about? And I've also started writing the new show as well. So it feels like my sort of brain is in multiple different directions.
Yeah.
But what I will say is I could sit here and say, I'm feeling neutral towards tour. As soon as I get up on that stage, I love it.
Mm.
I love that the audiences are always so generous and so smart and playful, because I do the first 25 minutes, I do crowd work rather than have a support act.
Yeah.
And the people I meet are so brilliant. Yeah, so I'm buzzing. I am buzzing to go back out and present this new show to the country, which I think is, I hope, funnier than my last. So... And I thought that was pretty funny. I wouldn't have got up on stage if I didn't think it was. So I hope that doesn't sound too arrogant.
No, it's really quick though, Chloe, isn't it? It's amazing the speed with which you've leapt up the table, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, my agents are quite, they sort of brandish the whip, I would say. I think putting those time constraints on essentially having to write a show in 6 months, you know, because of the way that Fringe to Fringe works.
Mm.
It just gets you really match fit. Like, you just learn how to write a joke and you learn how to be really effective on stage. And yeah, there's something quite exciting about it, to not trying to, you can't sort of delicately and intricately sort of pore over this master work. You just have to go, right, what do I want to talk about and how do I make that as funny as I can?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's quite effective for a comedian.
It is. Although I do love that crowd work bit at the beginning of any show. It's fantastic the way that skill is developed. I mean, some people make a joke of it by saying, well, I'm going to do some crowd work. Hello, what's your name? Nice to meet you. And then they move on, you know, which is fine. It's sort of saying, I don't do that. But the thing of just pursuing a person, in a way, finding out more about them until something comes up that is worth, what inspires you to comedy, it's amazing.
Yeah, I think that's bang on the way you've described it, of the reason people are like, oh, you know, how do you do the crowd work? And it's like, you just be patient, because A, you'll find something interesting in any person if you just keep asking questions in a curious fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And B, the person that you're asking questions to is likely to be very flustered. So the pressure cooker of that is going to make them say something weird.
Yeah.
So I think it's the experience of just sticking with it is an important one. But also, I think what I bring to it is like a genuine love of people and a genuine curiosity to find some common ground or find something that I find interesting about that person. And also like, I think there's a sense of my crowd work has often been described as like very good natured and inclusive, because I don't want to roast the person because they're being the kind, brave one that is having that really scary conversation with me. So I always try and make it a bit of a like, you know, like, don't worry, like, we're in this together kind of thing. Yeah. Like, I've got you, don't worry. Like, the rest of them, they're thick idiots.
Yes.
We're in this together.
Yeah, just you and me having a chat here. That's all it is. Yeah.
So I love it. I love that bit. And as I say, like, you genuinely meet really interesting, kind people. And yeah, that means a lot to me.
And you get that fantastic variation in a show that wouldn't happen if you were just going out and banging out the same show every night. That could become repetitive. You could, in a way, become too mechanical with that and sort of lose the humor of it. But the fact that you go out there to begin with by saying, right, hello, I'm Chloe, and you know, what's your name? Where have you come from? What do you do for a living? And you start with that and see where it goes, and then are able to bring that back into the show by referring, if there are bits in the show that match with something somebody said, you can turn it back in. That keeps the thing alive and interesting.
Again, there's bang on this, but very little I need to add to that. Yeah, you've just described it. It makes the show different every night, like, because then the second half is me doing the show. But as I say, I'm always finding opportunities to play because, as you say, it keeps it interesting for me and hopefully keeps it interesting for the audience because they feel they've got this unique experience that no one's seen before.
Yeah, well, they have. I mean, that is the joy of being on stage in a theatre, is that they are getting a unique experience. There'll always be some variation that you do.
Yeah, for sure.
The other day I was watching some and you did a thing where you said, you know, said something funny and said, thanks for that laugh. Thanks for the really big one at the back. It was only a comment, but it's really funny. There's nothing clever about it, really. But the cleverness is the fact that you're relaxed enough to say that.
I think quickness people find funnier than craft sometimes.
Yeah, quite.
I remember like it was over COVID or something. I was doing like a Zoom record for like a BBC radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going, oh, look, what I'm about to say is going to make it sound like it wasn't going decent. It was going decent.
Yeah.
I wasn't messing it up. I was doing okay. But then someone accidentally unmuted themselves on Zoom and said to their partner, oh, do we have to watch this? and then obviously that became the whole set. Like the rest of the time was just me being like, you're not sat in a thick, you're on Zoom, like, just turn it off. Are you thick? Like,
go away.
Yeah, if you don't want to watch it, you act like, what is this self-flagellation that you're sat there? and that clip sort of, you know, then did the rounds, because even in moments where someone's saying something really insulting, you can't react with insecurity. You just got to be like, wow, do you know what? That's pretty funny.
Yeah. No, it's lovely. I really like it. It's a great skill. Even the people right at the top have that skill. They've not lost it. The fact that Michael McIntyre can play a huge stadium in front of thousands and thousands of people, but he still has that ability that when he's talking to one person, he is absolutely talking to that one person.
I'm going to get a bit, you know, back in my day about this. but I genuinely hope we don't lose that because, and I don't think we will. I don't think we will because I think there's enough people that really love and are passionate about the live art of comedy.
Mm.
But I worry that sometimes people who are on TikTok or on Instagram or something like that, and then they start doing live work without having done the rounds.
Mm-hmm.
I worry for them because it's you can do that in front of a home crowd. But if you go to, you know, a crowd in, you know, rural Hull or something, yeah, and they're a bit hostile and a bloke shouts something horrible at you, you've got to be kind of ready for it. So, but maybe again, that's kind of old school of me. Maybe we are just seeing like a different generation of comics that can just perform to their niche. And maybe that's completely fine. Maybe I'm being a bit like, you know, comedy purist, comedy elitist, but I would much rather have that in my arsenal so that when I eventually get to perform to exclusively home crowds, if something does go a little bit off, I know how to deal with it because I've practiced that for years and years and years.
It's anybody who performs on a stage develops that by the experience of doing it, the stagecraft. Sure. Really, the ability to not be thrown by things not going as you thought they were going to go. So even in a play, which is very, in a way, strict, and you sort of are doing exactly the same thing most nights, when something goes wrong, if someone hasn't got that stagecraft, so quite often if they're inexperienced on stage, you see the panic in their eyes. Sure. But the older actors or the actors who've been around a bit or done lots of work will just go, no, this is the fun bit.
Yeah, and I hope it, yeah, again, I hope it doesn't sound like I'm coming from a comedy elitist space. It's more like a space of worry of watching these sort of up-and-coming comics that, like, go into performance spaces and are overawed by it. I'm just like, oh, it's such a shame that you have to do all of your learning so in the public eye, whereas I got to, you know, go around to do, you know, 20 minutes all around the country and no one will remember who I was, even if I ate shit for 20 minutes, which, you know, oftentimes I did. But that's the character building bit. That's the bit you've got to go through.
Yeah, you were just testing material.
The worst thing has to, for you to get good at comedy, you have to stop being scared of the worst thing happening. And then as soon as you stop being scared of the worst thing happening, the worst thing stops happening.
Yes, and the best things happen as a result of it, don't they?
Absolutely.
Having that nerve. It is all about nerve, I think. I think all performing is, really. You allow the comedy to occur. You give it the space. And that is always, whenever you say something that is supposed to be funny and you leave that gap, that's the nerve you're taking. That's the risk you take, because that could be silence. And then an experienced performer will go, that's all right. I don't mind. I don't mind that they didn't laugh. I can make something of that.
An experienced performer will go, they didn't know they were meant to laugh then. I'm going to pretend that I didn't want them to.
Yep. Oh, great. Well, I hope you have a fantastic time touring around. You've got some lovely dates. So this is going out on my birthday, Chloe, the 12th
Happy
of
birthday.
February. Thank you very much. Although it's not actually, we're recording it before, but let's pretend it is. It is my birthday. Hurrah.
In that sort of wibbly wobbly timey wimey kind of way, it is your birthday. It's perpetually your birthday, you know?
It is. And whenever anybody listens to this, you know, 2036 or something, and they go, let's listen to that old dead bloke. And then they go, look, he thought he was going to live forever. He's talking about his birthday. Bless him.
You seem very young to me.
Thank you.
Youthful of spirit, I'll say.
Yeah, that's the important thing. Well, let's find out then the things that you've chosen to put in your time capsule and see what that tells us about you. What's number one?
I've gone a mix of highbrow, lowbrow, if that's okay.
It's very good, I think.
Good. Okay, I'm pleased to hear
because
that.
Because life is.
Yeah, all of life is, isn't it? That's sort of what it boils down to. So my first pick is I'm a massive reader, and I think that's my greatest pleasure in life is sitting and reading.
Right.
So I've chosen the novels of Barbara Kingsolver, my first pick.
I'm a man with a house absolutely rammed with books because my wife is a massive reader.
Mm.
And I look at them and think, that looks interesting.
And then?
About as far as I go, Chloe.
You're an avid reader then, because most people don't get that far.
At least I'm aware of books.
Yeah.
So tell me about these books then.
So Barbara Kingsolver, she's insane. So I've only read two of them, and this is why, like, I think it's a good pick, because there's still like I'm kind of thinking of this in a desert island, this kind of way, but I'm not, but it's not that, is it? But basically, I guess what I'm putting in the time capsule is my reverence and complete joy in the two that I've already read and the excitement for the ones that I am yet to read.
Oh, that's good.
Her latest book is called Demon Copperhead, which is sort of loosely based on David Copperfield. And it's set in this sort of rural area in America. And it's about this young guy called Demon who it's kind of that coming of age narrative like David Copperfield is, where we see him when he's a little boy and he goes through the ringer and gets really mistreated. And then he grows up to sort of into maturity. And what's really cool about it is that his voice develops through the whole novel. So he sort of starts having like a childish perception, and then he grows this teenage perception, this adult perception. And then he sort of reflects on the things that happened to him as a child and as a teenager. And it's just incredibly powerfully written, incredibly moving, set at the backdrop of the opioid crisis. It's really compassionate to the people, you know, the rednecks essentially, and the people who have just been absolutely pummeled by society. But it's just like, it's like reading a friend. She's so incredible at presenting these characters that feel totally real and not like caricatures. And it just absolutely blew me away.
Fantastic. It's strange, isn't it, to find something so compelling from an area of America and a time in America that you don't really know? I mean, you were born in, well, sitting born, is that right?
That is right. Great research.
Yeah,
I think, but that's the beauty of like really incredible novelists is that they can draw you into a world regardless of background, and you just feel like you get this privileged look at this, you know, area of society that you've never considered or had any experience of before.
Absolutely. They can talk about food that they love that you have no knowledge of, and yet to you immediately it's sausage and mash, and it's the thing that you know.
Yeah.
That it's a great skill, isn't it? That thing of not alienating you by placing someone in a very specific place.
Mm. And then I went back and read David Copperfield over Christmas.
Right.
Just to sort of the research. And what I think she does incredibly is like she doesn't get bogged down in her source material, but she's also, I then read another of her books called The Poisonwood Bible, which is basically about four young women who go with their parents as missionaries to the Congo. And she lived in the Congo when she was young, so she obviously had like lots of personal experience of it, but she was also clearly done a lot of research.
Mm.
I think the thing that Demon Copperhead and The Poisonwood Bible have in common is that she deals with her source material, whether it be history or whether it be David Copperfield, with such like a deftness of touch where it kind of informs what she's writing, but it never feels like she's just like reciting a research.
Yeah, no, they're terrible, those books, aren't they, where they say he leant over and, of course, in this time, he was unable to flush the toilet. And you go, I know that.
I could just Wikipedia that.
Yeah, that's what he just done. He just Wikipedia'd. That's it.
But, yeah, she's top. And, yeah, I don't know, I just feel like, maybe I'm sort of getting sentimental now that I've turned 30, but when I get to read books like that, it just makes me so glad to be alive, because I'm just like, this is so cool that I get to just be here, gaining this much pleasure from something. How cool is that?
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, I must buy some books of hers and obviously then look at the covers.
And give them to your wife.
I'm going to give them to my wife and say, read that, tell me what it's about.
Do you know what I'll say as well? I would say they're long boys. Like if you're looking to get into reading, don't start with them.
Right.
I think Demon Copperhead about 800 pages, Poisonwood Bible about 900 pages. They're hardcore. So get your wife to read them and just give you a nice summary.
Yeah. Okay.
What does she like?
Well, she likes modern literature, but you know, proper novels, really.
Yeah.
I say, what's it about? She said, not really anything. Well, why are you reading it then? Who wins in the end?
That's funny.
Yeah. Okay, Chloe, right, let's put that in. I'm going to put the entire works in there so that, you know, if you ever open it up again, you'll go, didn't read that one. And that'll be you for weeks, I should imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Lovely. Okay, so what's number two? Okay, I hope you're having fun. Do stay with us as we take a short break in the hope that some adverts will be played. Back soon.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to My Time Capsule and our guest, Chloe Petz, who's ready to reveal the rest of her time capsule choices.
Well, the next one, am I allowed all of football?
You are allowed all of football, yes. All of it. The entire history, every game that's ever been played, all the great players. Yeah.
How do you think we contain it in the time capsule?
These things are sort of TARDIS-like. Depends how big a hole you want to dig. But do you think it should be every game that's ever been played? I mean, because there are lots of games that you watch. So my grandson goes to see Lewis play and loves it. And they're a non-league team. Those sort of games are as exciting as European Cup finals, aren't they?
Yes, they are. So how about we contain every single football match that's meant something to someone?
Yeah, very good.
That'd be every single one, right?
Yeah, it would be. It would be. Because you can see the passion when you just go to see kids play. You see, one of the reasons that parents would be very wise to stay away from watching their kids play football is because you get drawn in more to that than you would do if you were watching a Premiership decider.
I think we should be specific, though. I think we should say it should be adults of all genders on 11-a-side.
Anything that's got an official referee, I'm going to put in there. How's
yeah.
that?
Okay, I'll take that.
All right,
that,
good. Okay, right. So which ones out of that enormous cornucopia of brilliant games would you like to see again?
I would really love to see the Liverpool AC Milan 2005 Champions League final.
Oh, yeah.
I think that I credit that with solidifying and continuing my love of football. I already had like a real love of football, but I think my obsession with it was solidified in that game where I remember getting sent to bed when Liverpool went 3-0 down. And then I got called back down because my parents saw what was happening. And they said,
brilliant.
Chloe's got to watch this.
You've got to see this. Yeah.
Maybe it was more for them. I would have had like a 10-hour tantrum if I'd woken up the next morning and seen the score and known that they hadn't woken me.
Yeah,
it was just... I mean, I'm not even a Liverpool fan and I'm getting choked up about it. Mm-hmm. It was just everything you wanted football to be. It was complete underdogs doing what underdogs do, which is going 3-0 down. And then, you know, hearing that impassioned rendition of You'll Never Walk Alone and then them just coming out and doing what they did. And it's almost those days where you think there's destiny. You know, there's destiny to it. Like the Palace Brighton playoff semi-finals, the last time we got into the Premier League, had exactly the same moment that the Liverpool game did, which was Jerzy Dudek made a save that you just couldn't believe that he could make in the sort of final minutes. Julian Speroni did it in Brighton. I think it was Glenn Murray took this shot and you're just like, how has he kept that out? And it's that moment where as a fan you go, today is our day. Today it's destiny that we win. And you have that very rarely as a football fan. And when you do, it's electric.
It is lovely, though, isn't it, that you can watch other teams you don't support, and get as excited for their fans because you know how you'd feel about your own team doing that. You know, I remember watching that Liverpool game and being in tears at the end because it was so moving. It was so beautiful. And also, really, that such a great player, Gerrard, should have that sort of influence on a game because he'd never really, I don't think, fulfilled his promise in that Liverpool team until that moment.
Yeah, he's the greatest player to have never won a Premier League, I think, which is such a shame that he was so loyal. Well, obviously he was so loyal to a club that couldn't really deliver for him.
No.
But yeah, it was absolutely brilliant. And then Chelsea, a couple of seasons later, did something against all odds.
Against Bayern Munich, wasn't it?
Against Bayern Munich. And,
yeah,
and I remember
where
that.
Where they absolutely should have been 5-0 down and it just wouldn't go in.
Yeah, and you just go, ah, it's Chelsea's day today.
And, you know, for me, there's the 1999 final where,
of course.
You know, I mean, again, Bayern Munich should have been home and away. They should have been clear. Mm-hmm. No trouble. And they absolutely outplayed Man United the whole game. And then for this mad 5 minutes at the end.
Where did you watch it? And
I watched it at my neighbour's house, and he was German, and he'd invited all his friends, and they were all Bayern Munich fans. So I sat in the middle of a great crowd of Bayern Munich people who very kindly kept patting me on the shoulder and saying, oh, it is such a shame because Manchester United have been so good in the competition so far, and now they are not playing well, Mike.
Michael, tell me this. Were you gracious about it, or were you doing wanker signs in those Germans' faces?
You know the truth, don't you?
I would have been absolutely given it. I would have been absolutely insufferable.
Yeah, I ran up and down the street. Oh, Lord, not my greatest moment. But
it sounds actually, to me like your greatest moment.
Yeah, it was.
This is the thing, like, if Palace or England men's ever won something, I don't know if it would be worthwhile because I think I would probably party so hard that I'd die. And it would have all been for nothing. I think if England...
Suicide by football.
Suicide by football, but accidental suicide by football. Because if we win the Euros, you're going to find me in a bush about 4 days later.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be like, is that Chloe Petz from...
Can't be, can it?
I think she's...
I thought she had a couple of gigs the last few nights. But
missed those.
Missed them.
We'll win something in my lifetime. I mean, when the Lionesses won, oh my God, I've watched that again. Because I was there. It was one of the best days ever. Michael, it was brilliant. So I was doing something for Sky Sports in the morning and I didn't have a ticket. So I went to Wembley at like 7 a.m. to go and do some broadcasting. And as soon as I got there, one of the presenters went, do you have a ticket? And I was like, no, I don't have a ticket. And he went, I've got your ticket. So I hadn't brought any of my stuff because I thought, I'm just going back to East London. I'll watch it in the pub with my mates, you know, great. So I was there on my own without a phone charger, without a book from 9 a.m. till 3 p.m. kickoff. So Michael, you're a football fan. You've got 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. to kill. Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
Drinking.
There you go. I was absolutely slaughtered. And I've been having a bit of a thing about wanting the women's game to be a little bit more toxic so that the celebrations were a bit more impassioned. And as soon as I walk into the stadium, I'd found Maisie Adam by this point. I walk into the stadium, I get a stranger has airdropped me something and I open it and it was a picture of a German child crying from a previous game. And I thought, this is going to be brilliant. But I go in and I'm sat next to like an Irish guy who works for the FA and he's clearly there because he needs to be there to show his face for work. But he could not have wanted us to lose more. Like, just sort of wanted the downfall of his, you know, historical oppressors. And I was like, fair play to you, mate. I wouldn't want us to win either if I was you. But you're going to have to absolutely cheer with me when I jump all over you because I'm here on my own and you're my best mate for today. And there's just all these pictures, like, because I was sat right behind the goal, I was getting constant texts from all my mates going, is this you? Is this you? Is this you? Because everyone could just see me.
Yeah.
And these photos are brilliant because I'm just like going through every single football face you could possibly. Yes! Oh! Yeah! Come on! And it's like a slideshow of all of my emotions. And no one that I've ever loved has won something. So when we won it and I've been drinking since 9 a.m, I didn't know what to do because I was used to feeling grossly unhappy at that point and I'd almost become used to that. And I didn't know how to handle the joy. So I just sobbed for about 20 minutes whilst the Irish guy held me. And then found Maisie Adam, got back on the beers and had a big night. It was fantastic.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, see, you've got to have the whole of football in the time capsule then. I mean, that sort of passion. And you're right, I do love the slightly aggressive, slightly nasty side that football can have, which is very funny.
Oh, it's so funny. It's so funny, like, being so mean in such an uncalled for way. I just think it's really funny. I love, like, when someone in the away end or something does something a bit weird, you're like, who's the wanker in the black? Who's the wanker? I love it. It's great.
Yeah, quite. Okay, so we've got football in there. That's two things we put in. So we've gone highbrow, lowbrow. Where are we going now?
We're going highbrow again. Mm-hmm. We're going back arty. this was a difficult one. I'm big into watching films, so this was difficult to narrow down. But I think ultimately I've gone for all of the films of Céline Sciamma, who is an incredible French writer and director. And I think Portrait of a Lady on Fire is one of the greatest films I've ever seen. I found it like profoundly beautiful and moving and hot and just like this cool. It was basically just like, you know, what would it look like if women like self-governed essentially for a bit? Yes. And it was just like very beautiful and affirming and non-judgmental.
Lovely. I'm ashamed to say I've never watched it. But then again, I use films as an escape. I use films in a way to sort of shut off. Do you know what I mean? If I'm worried about something, I just sit and watch some really crappy film with lots of people charging around all over the place and firing guns.
You don't just look at the cover of the Blu-ray?
No, I'm right in there, deep diving into these things.
Well, I wish then that I'd gone more that way because I love that too. I love big, crashy, bashy action films. I love like John Wick and The Equalizer.
Yeah,
and
I can watch The Equalizer almost every night. It's terrible.
It's so good, isn't it? Have you seen John Wick?
I have, yeah.
Oh my God, it's so good. Have you seen Nobody?
No.
Right, Michael.
Tonight.
You watch that tonight. And
for
you tell
my birthday.
For your birthday treat. We'll take you bowling, we'll get you a McDonald's, and then we're going to come home and we're going to watch Nobody.
Okay.
It's so good. It's from the producers of John Wick, and it's that guy from Breaking Bad, Bob Odenkirk.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it's like, it's kind of like John Wick, but you know, he's trying to get back his daughter's bracelet or something. And he's like, he's this old washed up guy. His life's really shit and formulaic now. And there's a break into his home and he doesn't harm the guys. He doesn't harm the guys that break into his home because he has like a conscience. And all of the blokes in the local area come around and go, oh, you didn't protect your family and your home. Like, oh, that's a bit, you know, of a pussy move kind of thing. And then he goes on this revenge mission. And there's a scene on a bus, which if you like that kind of thing, you're going to love.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
I do like that sort of thing. Yeah.
I can see your eyes have just lit
up. Yeah, I've gone, right, that's it. That's me looking at that.
That's me on my birthday.
He started off as a writer on Saturday Night Live. Did you know that?
Bob Odenkirk?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I think comic writers are the best dramatic writers as well. Like, I think it's so transferable as a skill because you have to, in comedy, I think you have to really learn rules, which you can then break in drama. And also, like, having to tell a story and make it funny is so much harder than just having to tell a story.
Yeah.
So then as soon as you just go back to having to tell a story, you're like, sorry, I don't even have to put jokes in this. That's brilliant.
But you're right about that thing, because I think the building of tension in a situation is the same tension you'd build before you do a joke.
Absolutely.
But in this situation, you build the tension and then something terrible happens.
It's the sort of horror comedy pairing, isn't it? That is tension, release. Just
yeah, absolutely.
Different ways.
It's why people laugh when something frightening happens, because it's so close, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Or scream when I do something funny.
I heard that was when you came on stage.
Yeah. Oh,
it's a bit like Elvis.
Don't. Yeah, loads of bras being thrown up my head. Going, guys, stop it.
Please. Well, I don't know her films at all. Are most of them in French originally?
Yes, they are. So Petite Maman is also, it's so stunning. You haven't seen that one?
No, I mean, no, I'm completely ignorant of this subject.
It's like a kid, she basically like meets the childhood version of her mother in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I've got tingles just even saying that. Like, I think it's a really beautiful exploration of daughters' relationships to their mothers. Like, I think there's a lot of guilt that exists between daughters and their mothers because by, you know, the sheer process of time, things just get better for people that have previously been oppressed. Generation to generation.
Hopefully,
yeah. But I think that's kind of how the way history tends, right?
Yeah.
But maybe that's sort of a very Western-centric kind of view. But I think, but to go back to, there's a guilt that you get to flourish in a way because of all the sacrifices that your mother made for you, right?
Yeah.
And I think this is like a really special exploration of being able to have that conversation or have a conversation, be in dialogue with your mother in a way that it feels like wish fulfillment. You know, we'd all like to meet our mothers when they were children and see what they're like.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a shame that a lot of mothers get to the point where they feel, well, I can't reveal that side to my child because they'll see it as encouragement of their behaviour. If I say, I did that, I was like that when I was, you know. Yeah, I kept bunking off school and all those. My wife did all of those things. She told our children all the terrible things she did as a child. So they absolutely grew up with her being like their mate. But actually, because she was then able to say, although look at me now, and I wouldn't make that decision if I were you. And they listened to her, which is amazing.
My mum has a great story. My mum and godmother tell me this one all the time. Now they'll tell me, now that I'm an adult, and they're pretty sure I've made most of my mistakes. So both of them live in Sittingbourne and always have done. And my godmother and my mum have been best friends since school. And apparently they used to work in London when they were like 18. And they'd come home and they'd come on the last train after getting really pissed in the pub. And at the time, it would be like trains where you could open the window down or like open the door. So my godmother went to my mum and was like, oh, you never guess what I saw on the morning commute when I got to Sittingbourne Station at 6 a.m. Someone had thrown up all over the station floor. And my mum was like, yeah, that was me last night. Yeah. I got down on the last train, you got on the first train, and you've just stepped over my puke to get there. So yeah, it's nice when your parents get humanized to you.
Yeah, it's a good thing. I think it's important to admit that you've made mistakes in your life. I mean, my wife was a wild child, absolute wild. I mean, it shocked me when she started telling me, I went, you did what? What? Well, I look forward to seeing these films then.
Yeah. The final one that I'll give a shout out to is I don't believe she directed it, but she might have written it. She's in some way involved in it. And it's this beautiful animated film called My Life as a Courgette. And it's basically just like about this little boy that lives in an orphanage. And it's incredibly moving and beautiful. And it's like really short, but really powerful. So I think the American release was like My Life as a Zucchini. But yeah, it's great.
Okay, right. Yeah. That's three things we put in there. So we've got one good thing and one bad thing. One good thing you want to keep and one you'd like to get rid of.
I like to do the good thing because I'd like to end the show on a sour note. No, the good thing is one of my favourite things of all time, karaoke. Uh-huh. I love it. I love it so much. Again, I just have tried to choose stuff that makes me happy to be alive. Mm. And there's nothing that makes me more happy than being at karaoke with my friends. And I think I'm, again, not to blow smoke up my own arse, but I think karaoke is something that I'm very talented at, both as a watcher and a performer. Because I think as a performer, what you've got to do is you've got to choose the right song, and then you've got to be good enough that people are impressed by you when they're drunk, but bad enough that it doesn't look like you're showing off.
Yeah.
So I think I've got that. And then because I love karaoke so much, I'm always stood at the front supporting that person going, yeah, this is amazing. Because it's very quick for people to get bored of karaoke songs. Like, oh, you know, we'll support this person for about a minute, but I'm there with them through the whole song.
Very good.
Do you like karaoke?
I love karaoke.
Yes, I love that.
I have the problem that I am, and I am going to blow smoke up my own ass, is that I am a very good singer.
Great.
You know, so it is difficult to not look like you're showing off. So I have to choose a song. Generally, if I'm doing karaoke, I'll choose a song that people wouldn't expect you to sing.
I think what you've got to lean into if you are a really good singer is you've just got to then be impressive. Like, you've just got to go, do you know, F this, I'm going to sing like a really difficult song.
Right.
And everyone's going to stop what they're doing. They're going to turn and look, who's this guy? Can we go to karaoke together?
Yeah, I'd love to.
On your birthday, karaoke, and then we'll watch Nobody together.
But I'll tell you my trick. My trick for looking impressive is that I always choose a woman's song. People don't expect you to. So, for example, I Will Always Love You.
Oh, my God.
I can sing that. It's not that high, really, for a man. It just looks really high.
Yeah. For the listener, my jaw has dropped. I genuinely want to go to karaoke with you. I'm always buzzed to find a new karaoke partner. But what I go for is like Tina Turner, actually. Because obviously she sings her songs brilliantly, but like if you sing something like The Best, you basically, you get the verse for yourself and then the chorus is your, is the little treat for the audience because they don't know the words of the verse, so you get to sing it and then you get, they get to sing the chorus with you. But what's good about that is she obviously sings it brilliantly and I would never claim to be sort of like one fingernail of her talent.
No.
But The Best, it does just start, it's all just one note for quite a long time. So it's quite easy.
Repeat, yes.
Yeah,
it leads to that moment when everybody will join in with you. That's, of course, why Sweet Caroline works so well. And that's an easy one to do if I'm going to sing a male song. Of course, I have had the great advantage. I was in 5 series of Benidorm, and we filmed it in Benidorm and went to karaoke most nights.
No, you can't tell me stuff like that.
So sorry.
That's incredible.
What's more incredible is that earlier on you said that I looked youthful. How can you cope with that? I'm only 35.
Look, what I'm going to say is I'm going to say you don't look youthful, but you just feel youthful. That's what I said. I can't believe that. Because Benidorm's one of those shows where you're like, I hope they was having as much fun offset as it looks like they were having on it.
More.
Oh, man.
Crazy.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, it is cool. It's very, I'm lucky, lucky man. So, yes, yeah. I absolutely agree with you. I think karaoke is a fantastic thing because you don't have to be a great singer to have an effect. Some people will stand up and you will expect absolutely nothing from them. And the fact that they give you something is really exciting. And I think that that sort of evening out of things is a fantastic thing.
I went to karaoke after Palace once with my mate Eddie. We just went into a bar and it was so funny because, like, you know, it was like a proper local pub vibes. Everyone was very strange. And every time we went to the bar, people would be like, has Della sung yet? And we were like, no, we don't know. Who's Della? And every time we went, oh, you've got to wait till you hear Della. Oh my God. Just whisperings of Della. And we're like, who's this Della? Della's going to absolutely smash it. Della came on. It's one of the worst karaoke renditions I've ever heard in my fucking life. She just squawked her way through it. But yeah. I think everyone was so drunk, like they just sort of corrected the notes in their mind. But yeah, I love it. It's perfect.
Fantastic. Oh, I've got so many stories I could tell you. I'll show you a video. I've got such a funny video from Benidorm. I've got extraordinary videos.
Oh, please do. We need to exchange WhatsApps. There's lots of stuff I want to
send you some
talk
things.
About. Thank
Lovely.
You.
Okay, so let's put the thing in that you want to get rid of.
I've struggled with this a bit. And I feel like I've like picked something from like 2010. But the thing that just popped into my head was Top Gear. I don't know why. Just every time Top Gear comes on, I go, for fuck's sake, and I feel sick. And it's not even because I object to it on like, you know, if some middle-aged blokes want to chat about cars, then there's space for that, for sure. It just bores me to death. I'm like, Jesus, we're still talking about Porsches, are we? Oh, we don't know who the Stig is. That's interesting.
I know. I think that, first of all, you should go out on a sort of cerebral night with my wife, because I think you'd get on fantastically well in that area. And then we should go on a football karaoke night with me, because I will watch Top Gear, but I think it's a very strange thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And particularly as they got older and older and older, you go, what's going on? My wife did meet Richard Hammond, though, and she's always hated Top Gear and had lunch with him and said he was the most charming, most delightful man.
I'm sure. I'm absolutely, maybe not Jeremy Clarkson, but I'm sure the other two are absolutely lovely.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, oh no. Every time it comes on, my heart sinks. Do you have shows like that where if it comes on the telly, you go, oh God.
Yeah, I do. There are certain ones that really I shouldn't have like that. I mean, for example, Waking the Dead. I always think, oh, for goodness sake, what are these? Why don't they just stay in the lab? What are they doing at all these places? Why are they investigating it? They're not the police. It drives me mad that they've got this concept that they've squeezed it all into. And I can't watch it because I think this wouldn't happen.
That's very fun. That wouldn't happen.
That wouldn't happen.
Whereas all of the stuff that happens in The Equalizer, that would happen.
That would happen. Yeah, that would happen. There are special people like that out there. And we know that to be true, Chloe. So, yes, I'm going to put Top Gear into the time capsule and bury it.
Thank you.
Well, that all sounds a bit too like the truth, really. It's been really fabulous talking to you. It's been great to meet you. And I look forward.
Yeah,
I will swap WhatsApp things. I'll send you some videos. I've got a fantastic
Please
video.
Do. Yeah. I would love that. I think that would be absolutely fantastic. I genuinely, if you want to go to karaoke, I think that it would, we'd be a very surprising duo, but a very compatible
we
one.
We would.
What's that 30-year-old lesbian do with that old geezer? My true colours are coming out. Thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure. I've loved it.
Good.
Yeah.
You have been listening to My Time Capsule with me, Mike Fenton-Stevens, and my guest, Chloe Pets. Do subscribe to this podcast. We'd be most grateful. We release 2 episodes a week, which is quite a lot of work, so we really appreciate your support. Do tell your friends and maybe inform a stranger that you've enjoyed the podcast by rating, reviewing, or leaving a comment on the podcast provider you prefer. Thank you. Do download the theme tune from Spotify. It's more complicated than you'd imagine, which becomes all the more clear when I'm not blathering away on top of it. It was written and performed by Pass the Peas Music. Don't forget you can get this pod without ads by subscribing to Acast Plus. Details in the description of this episode. You probably won't forget it, as we do tell you quite often. And that's because we'd like you to join the exclusive club that gets our bonus podcast every week. And of course, also get a chance to join our monthly £10,000 draw. Now, one of those things isn't real. I'll let you work out which it is. Well done. My Time Capsule and I are on social media, so do join us if you fancy a chat. This cast-off production was made for Acast to distribute and was produced by John Fenton Stevens. Right, time for some exercise. My fitness regime to try and drop a few pounds. Not great results so far. I bought one of those charts that tells you what weight you should be according to your height. And actually, it turns out that I'm not overweight. I'm just 2 feet too small. Anyway, I've combined the fitness regime with a diet. I only eat things with the word special in the name, like Special K, obviously, special fried rice, that's good, and of course, M&S double chocolate fudge cake. Special offer. Bye.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.